Hello and good morning. Welcome to the Backstage Classical Podcast. Today's episode, completely in English, takes us to New York, to the Metropolitan Opera in the era of Donald Trump. And my guest is the director of the opera house, Peter Gelb.
Guten Morgen. Die großen Themen der Klassik für den Weg zur Arbeit mit Axel Brüggemann.
Peter Gelb, General Manager of the Metropolitan Opera in New York, is briefly passing through Vienna. He asked if we'd like to meet before he heads off to Ukraine. He's traveling with his wife, conductor Carolyn Wilson, who will be conducting there. Peter Gelb wants to visit the region his family came from. Together, they're even planning to meet with Ukraine's First Lady, Olena Zelenska. We arranged to meet at the Hotel Imperial, right across from the Musikverein. It's the first time Peter Gelb has been back in Vienna in many years. A lot has changed in the US since then. The Metropolitan Opera has made it through the pandemic, but not without major financial losses. Now Donald Trump is back, and since his return, the promising numbers of recent months have plummeted. New York alone is seeing a 17% drop in tourism, and the opera feels that impact, says Peter Gelb. Black t-shirt, still water, that's how he speaks about the problems back home.
The situation in the United States is very complicated right now, to put it mildly. There's no question there's an enormous drop-off of tourists. I think 75% fewer Canadians are coming. And the Met has, you know, like Broadway, relies upon foreign visitors. We always have. Before the pandemic, 20% of our audience was made up of international tourists. And that number had been improving as tourism had been improving. And in fact, we projected this season to be our best season of recovery since the pandemic. But in the last couple of months of the season, we suffered, as many cultural institutions in New York and across the nation. But of course, the Met is the biggest of the performing arts companies in America, so we always suffer more. It had a negative impact on our box office.
What is interesting is that Peter Gelb doesn't directly blame Donald Trump for the drop in tourism and audience numbers, even though it's obvious. The US, under its new president, is attracting fewer visitors. It's no longer seen as a desirable travel destination. And yes, that has a lot to do with Donald Trump. But many artists and cultural figures in the US speak out only quietly, if at all. Yet, it's clear that the Trump administration is interfering with the arts. One of its first moves was to cut what little public funding there was for culture. So, how does all this affect the Metropolitan Opera?
We received actually less than 1% of our budget from the federal government, and that was eliminated shortly after the Trump administration took over. In fact, all the arts funding basically has been eliminated from the government. For us, it doesn't have a noticeable impact, but obviously for smaller arts organizations across the country, it could be devastating for them. We rely upon private philanthropy to make up the difference between our earned revenue and our expenses, and that gap became even greater after the pandemic because for a variety of reasons. You know, financial instability that's taking place around the world, and it certainly does not encouraging for donors because, you know, although the Met has very loyal and faithful supporters and they continue to support us, it is sort of a rule of thumb that in the world of philanthropy, when there is a state of economic stability, if the stock market is fluctuating wildly, people who are wealthy, even if they're very philanthropic, become more anxious about giving away money because they like to give away money when it is at the highest value. They don't like to give it away when their own personal wealth is diminished.
To sum all that up, it's not just about government funding cuts or uncertain tourist numbers. Trump's impact on the arts also includes a climate of financial instability that's making donors more cautious. Already in our last conversation, Peter Gelb explained to me that many billionaires have long since stopped investing in the arts. If they give at all, it's to concrete humanitarian causes, for example, healthcare initiatives in Africa or Gaza, or, as Gelb later notes, some, like Elon Musk, have stopped donating entirely. It's as if supporting the arts is no longer seen as a social responsibility. So yes, cultural institutions are facing a new, enormous financial struggle. But what about artistic freedom? In the US, books are being removed from schools. Performances that take on progressive themes are being cancelled. At Kennedy Center, Trump reportedly influences the programming personally.
There certainly is the creeping sense that we see that artistic freedom is threatened. The most obvious example is the Kennedy Center, but which is under the financial control of the government, which is why the government was able to make the changes that they have made there. I believe very strongly in artistic freedom. I believe that it is a bedrock of democracy and of civilization, and so, which is why I feel more than ever it is of the utmost importance for institutions like the Metropolitan Opera and other leading cultural institutions around the world. Because it's not just in America, you know. I mean, freedom is being threatened all over the world with the rise of autocratic governments. And what we cannot do is allow our artistic freedom to be harmed or crushed. And I think it's very important that we, you know, if anything, demonstrate our artistic freedom now more than ever.
So, artistic freedom is under threat, says Peter Gelb, and it's the damn responsibility of cultural institutions to defend it. The situation in the US is also being closely watched in Europe. Some artists, like pianist Andras Schiff, have said they won't perform in the US while Trump is in power. Others, like conductor Françoise Hermest, argue that now, more than ever, it is crucial to support American cultural institutions because they are on the front lines pushing back. And Peter Gelb? He prefers a diplomatic answer.
I mean, I can say that I understand that people are frightened. You know, I mean, when you have a government that spends a great deal of its time in active retribution, it's very difficult for people. And I'm sympathetic to the point that you know, individuals have to not only be speaking for themselves but also protecting the institutions that they run. However, you know, as we've learned, and this is a lesson of history throughout history, that being intimidated by autocratic governments is not a recipe for success. You know, we must be able to speak freely. My hope is that America's democratic principles will in the end prevail. Certainly, America is in a state of peril at the moment.
At the same time, it is clear that American society is more divided than it has been in decades, a phenomenon we are also seeing in Europe. Could institutions like the opera help building bridges in such a polarized climate?
Well, I think in the case of the Metropolitan Opera, I think all the artists who perform in the Metropolitan Opera and the people who work for the company, we have 2,000 to 3,000 people working there on any given day, they know that the Metropolitan Opera stands for democracy and for cultural freedom of expression. And they have heard me speak about these subjects, whether it's at cast parties or in the intermission of a live transmission to movie theaters around the world. For example, when we presented Fidelio around the world, I made a brief speech about how important it is in these dangerous, perilous times to stand up to autocracy. Yeah, I think the people who come to the Met know that the Met stands for that. And you know, I think the Met, I'm very proud of the fact that the Met is a symbol of cultural democracy to people all around the world.
As far as I know, the New York Philharmonic never publicly responded to Andras Schiff's cancellation. But Gelb makes it clear, no artist has yet refused to perform at the Metropolitan Opera in protest against Donald Trump.
Now, the only artists who say they don't want to come to the Met, it's for other reasons than political ones. It's usually because they don't feel I've given them the right roles.
Okay, that is normal opera business. But let's come back to the bigger question. What role can an opera house play in a time like this? Could it be a home for aesthetic and social debate that goes beyond everyday politics?
Well, it's not so much to create a debate, it's to show that there is a way forward that is not a pathway of lies and misrepresentations. You know, I think, you know, art at its highest form is is something that is elevates people's lives. And you know, the Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which is an adaptation of this wonderful epic novel by the American author Michael Chabon, that opens our season in September. The composer Mason Bates, the librettist is Gene Shearer. This opera is not going to persuade some right-wing nationalist to not be a Nazi or not to be a neo-Nazi, but it will provide a kind of artistic redemption to audiences. If it's success, we haven't done it yet, so we have to hope it's a success. But I have good feelings about it, but it does provide kind of reinforcement of good values to people. You know, to people who, you know, the world is so fractured right now that I think what art can do is to support the people who believe in truth and freedom.
In truth and freedom. Well, what we in Europe often fail to realize is that the so-called wokeness debate has been simmering in the US for years. And many intellectuals, as some argue, have failed to bring a wider public along with them. That's part of why the backlash against cultural institutions has grown so strong. Have artists and institutions gone too far in their political correctness? And is the theater still the moral institution it once claimed to be?
I mean, my opinion is art should not be pedantically educational. I mean, you know, it's certainly education is very important because there's a lack of education today about the arts, and it's very helpful, I think, for young people to learn about art in school, and so much of that is missing today. You know, there's such an emphasis on technology and making money that schools do not educate students in the same kind of well-rounded way. You know, when I was a kid growing up in New York, every public school which I went to would offer free musical instruments. Philip Glass, the great composer, when he graduated from Juilliard in the mid-60s, his first job was to be the composer in residence of the Pittsburgh public school system, which was a federally funded position in which he was creating music for everything from high school marching bands to high school orchestras. So, I mean, that's world is long forgotten, unfortunately, and so. But I do feel, you know, it's very important to educate young people about art. But that's different than what we offer an adult audience. I mean, sure, every great work of literature or a great work of art should provide answers to questions or ask questions or that can, you know, lead to greater enlightenment and understanding. But that's a different kind of education. I mean, that's artistic enlightenment. And that's what I think we're looking for.
Artistic enlightenment. Europe watches the Trump era with confusion, especially in countries like Germany, where cultural institutions are heavily subsidized. But could it be that a similar shift of paradigma is already on the horizon for us?
I think there's grave danger, actually, throughout Europe today of right-wing nationalism, populism, undermining artistic institutions. And it's why artistic institutions need to beware and to be careful about how they conduct themselves. Not to be acting out of fear, but acting out of responsibility, a sense of responsibility. Being moral and having a kind of natural debate that comes with great art is, for me, second nature. I mean, that's what it's all about. So, but the danger is that autocracies and the surge of right-wing nationalism that's going across around the world doesn't want that. So, you know, we have to be very strong. And at the same time, we have to be relevant, you know, because the danger, you know, I think opera companies in Europe who have grown perhaps complacent with government funding are going to find themselves in grave danger when the government funding suddenly goes away. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, there was a scandal in England when the Conservative Party, a cultural minister, went to an opera and was attacked by her fellow members of her political Conservative Party for having been seen at an opera. I mean, and this, you know, this is the danger. The danger is that institutions which are in Europe, which have relied upon the government to support them, will suddenly have the rug pulled out from under them and be left with nothing.
That is very interesting. What Peter Gelb says here is worth noting. Europe's cultural institutions are also under pressure, both financially and in terms of content. Gelb believes that only change can respond to change. Those who try to preserve the old world at any cost will be the first to be left behind. In the end, he says, everyone must find their place in the system they want to survive in. For Gelb, that system is America. And that drives him to be constantly inventive.
Well, you know, the system in the States is what we've got. It has advantages and disadvantages. I mean, the advantages is that we have no government control. I have no ministers telling me what I should be doing. You know, I made it very clear when I took this job 20 years ago to our very loyal and supportive board that we needed their financial support, we needed their governance, but not their artistic advice. And so I have been able to, and I think most cultural leaders in America who run performing arts companies have done the same, which is that we were able to navigate the funding and it's sort of like separation of church and state, you know, a fundamental principle in America, or at least it used to be. you know, we rely upon funding from private donors, but artistically we are independent of them. And we also have a responsibility to the audience. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the dangers in Europe is that it's not to say that artistic institutions in Germany should in any way be pandering to the government or to trying to find a broader public by diminishing or lowering their artistic ideals. On the other hand, though, they do have to be very. I think there has to be a great deal of sensitivity as there is at the Met to stimulating the public in a broader sense. I mean, we are a public art form. You know, opera cannot exist. No theater can exist without an audience, and it's the relationship between the cultural institution and the audience, which completes the circle and makes something possible. And so, I think it's very important that, for example, with new work, to choose new works that have no chance of appealing or stimulating a broad audience is a mistake. I mean, we need to try to constantly be thinking about the bigger picture of why we exist and who we exist for. In the end of the day, you can't please everyone. You have to be true to yourself, but you can't operate in a vacuum either, because you have to be aware. Now, these days, you have to be aware of a lot of the government, and you have to be aware of everything. So I think, you know, the life of people running opera houses and theaters is harder than ever. But as my friend, the director Robert Lepage, once said to me, problems are my friends.
And so, in the end, change remains the only and probably best option.
The key to being successful in running a theater or opera company is being able to adapt and being able to change. Nothing, particularly in the world today, you know, everything is changing every minute. We have to change with it. I mean, and now I'm talking about how we reach audiences, how we approach the public. If there are fewer tourists coming to America, we will find ways to replace them with new audiences that are not tourists. I'm very proud of the fact that Germany, for example, is the second largest audience for the Met when it comes to our cinema transmissions. Before the pandemic, 67% of our audience in cinemas was outside the United States. Now it's about 50-50 because, you know, the problem, that's a whole other problem, which is that, you know, during the pandemic, people's viewing habits changed. The adult audience for cinemas in Germany and in America and France across the world has been diminished, and we're gradually winning it back. Before the pandemic, we would have an average of 250,000 people watching the Met in cinemas live around the world. Now it's about half of that amount. But I'm excited about the operas that we are presenting. The one thing I'm very proud of is that the Met, by virtue of its cinema transmissions and radio broadcasts, is actually, if I wouldn't go so far as saying it's the world's opera company, but it's the closest thing to it in terms of having an international audience that is sharing what we're presenting on the stage of the Met. So I have an obligation to audiences everywhere, and the Met has an obligation to audiences everywhere, and we will continue to strive to meet that obligation.
In the coming season, European audiences will see how the current situation in the US is shaping the Met's programming. The season opens with The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, a new opera by Mason Bates. And Peter Gelb is already exploring new ways of replacing lost fundings. He's not ready to reveal more just yet. One day after our conversation, Peter Gelb and his wife departed for Ukraine. For Gelb, the Metropolitan Opera has long been a house of resistance, especially against Vladimir Putin. He was one of the first opera directors to officially disinvite Anna Netrebko because of her ties to Russia, and he plans to stay that course.
I learned a lot about Russia and politics and cultural politics through my experiences there. You know, I brought Vladimir Horowitz to Russia in the 80s. I made a documentary film about Mstislav Rostropovich and his wife Galina Vishnevskaya returning from exile at the end of after having been thrown out of the country by Brezhnev along with Solzhenitsyn, who they had been protecting. So, you know, I understand how important art and politics is to autocratic states like Russia, then previously the Soviet Union, which is one of the reasons why I've been so insistent upon supporting Ukraine's fight for its freedom.
And yet, Peter Gelb and his Met want to remain open to dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, even with Russian artists, you know, I've tried to draw a line. I don't want the Met to be conducting witch hunts. You know, as much as I am supporting Ukraine 24 hours a day, I have some differences of opinion about, you know, I totally am sympathetic to the situation in Ukraine where Russian is not allowed to be spoken and where Russian art is denied. You know, most recently we were just presenting Tchaikovsky's Peak Dom at the Met because I believe that, you know, the great Russian art and Russian artists should not be held hostage to the criminal actions of Putin and his criminal regime. And there are Russian singers who are singing at the Met, you know, who live in Russia and who are performing in Russia. It makes me a little bit uneasy, but on the other hand, I feel it's not fair to them for me to make a judgment that they are not permitted to perform at the Met. You know, I draw the line basically any Russian artist who is publicly supporting Putin or the Russian regime, or who, you know, is really kind of in ideological alignment with Putin and that is known as to be so, we do not invite to the Met.
After our conversation, Gelb departs, heading for Ukraine. After that, it's back to New York. There he will once again have to anchor the opera in a completely new and unpredictable world. Thanks for listening. This was Guten Morgen, the podcast of Backstage Classical. For daily classical music updates, visit backstageclassical.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram or Blue Sky, where we also post the top stories in English. For now, take care and keep your ears open.